Thank you for listening and supporting the mission of the Global Liberty Alliance, dedicated to strengthening and defending fundamental individual rights, free markets, and the rule of law.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another GLA podcast. This is your host, Jason Poblet, coming to you again from the sunny state of Florida. GLA has repositioned itself. We still have our offices in Alexandria, Virginia, but we now have a Southern Command here in Central Florida, on Florida Space Coast, very close to Cocoa Beach, Space Force, Melbourne, and just a wonderful Florida community out here. We have a show today as a follow-up to a November 15th podcast we did with the Fakuri family. And before I get into that, which is a very tragic case, I want you all to go listen to that podcast if you haven't, because it's a powerful story about an American who lost his life at the hands of the Lebanese government and Hezbollah, a terrorist organization. It's a very complex case, and we're going to hear a little bit more about what the family's been up to. But before we talk about that, last week, the chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee, Chairman McCall from Texas, sent a letter, powerful letter, about USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development. That's an organization that does programs around the world. They send our tax dollars to do some great work in some places, but every now and then, and I think more now than then, you've been seeing a lot of, frankly, gross negligence, as the chairman said, in the handling of our tax money. And in this particular case, they've been doing oversight on this for a while now, and they're alleging that thousands and thousands of dollars have been sent to a terrorist-linked nonprofit. They sent a letter to USAID Administrator Samantha Power, a former Obama administration official who now is heading up the agency, and we're going to provide a letter from Chairman McCall in the program notes. And this is important for the topic we're going to talk about today, because USAID sends a lot of money to Lebanon, and some of that money, I believe, ends up in the hands of terrorists as well. Money that, who knows, as this family is going to tell us now, maybe we've been helping prop up a bunch of people who've been involving in gross violation of human rights, in the unlawful detention, kidnapping, torture, and death of Americans, like Amer Fakuri, and others. Qatar sent about $60 million last year to the Lebanese Armed Forces and the ISF. We have sent about another $70 million out there as well. That's in addition to other forms of aid. We're not going to be able to talk about all the Lebanon issues today, but for our purposes, friends, we send a lot of money to Lebanon. We have to hold these people to account and how they use this money. And just because certain things have been done a certain way for so many years doesn't mean we have to keep doing it. So let's talk to the Fakuri family and see what they've been up to since November of last year. First of all, Happy New Year to Zoya and Gila. We're joining us. I don't know where you're all at today, but I don't think it's Florida. Zoya, Gila, how are you? Welcome to the podcast as always. How are you both doing?
Hi, Jason. Happy New Year to you and to the listeners. We are actually from New Hampshire, so it's very cold here.
Very cold. Well, I'm glad you're there and I'm here, but you're always welcome to come down here. It's 80 degrees today. It's sunny, not a cloud in the sky. I think you're in for a few more weeks of cold, but I like the cold too, but I prefer the warmth every now and then. So, Zoya, tell us a little bit about your dad's case. For people who maybe have never heard this, even though they may listen to the podcast, but maybe they want to cheat and just go ahead and jump into the material today. For someone who's never heard about this, tell us briefly what happened to your dad and this effort that you all are engaged in. What's happening since we last spoke?
Yeah, so back in September of 2019, my family went on a vacation to Lebanon, and our father was illegally held by the Lebanese General Security. He was tortured there, forced to sign false documents, which were then used to illegally hold him for 7 months in Lebanon. When we were able to get him to return back to the States, he unfortunately passed away just due to the maltreatment he received in Lebanon. We have since opened up a foundation to shed light on what is happening in countries like Lebanon on individuals who are illegally held overseas. And, you know, we're fighting for accountability because we want to prevent this from happening, and we want to hold individuals accountable who have played a role in illegally detaining Americans overseas.
What's the name of the foundation?
The Amir Pakori Foundation.
Okay, we'll provide links, folks, support them, go to their website, read more about the story. So since we last spoke, a lot of things have happened in Lebanon, of course, but also on your projects. I know you've been to Washington many times. You've met with U.S. officials in Congress, in the State Department, the Security Council. You've been powerful advocates, all of you, your mom, all your sisters, your extended family. They've been out there advocating for your dad, for Amir Pakori. In Lebanon, they too have been struggling with pretty much almost a failed state. There were these mass protests in 2019. Then there was that big bombing of the port of Beirut where almost 200 people or 200 more people died. A lot of people were arrested. Some people were tried. And then this, just last week, I saw this come across. This is how we reconnected after a few things we've been working on together with y'all. On the release of an American, supposedly. I'm not too clear on all the facts about what happened. Tell us, Gila, you know, what's going on there with the release of this American that's supposedly connected to the port of Beirut bombing? This person was in custody. He was in front of a judge. Some people are saying he was a hostage. I'm not sure he was a hostage based on what I've read. What has the Pakori Foundation been able to figure out in your accountability journey? And why is this important for what you all are working on?
Yes. First, I would like to touch base on what you said in the beginning about the U.S. AIG. I am glad an investigation is going on for the U.S. AIG. We know in Lebanon from many sources that a lot of the money that the U.S. AIG give is for towns basically controlled by Hezbollah.
Really?
And so this is where all the money goes in Lebanon. We have spoken with LIF members who also say that all the money that help LAF, half of it goes to Hezbollah. So there's a lot of corruption in that side of things here from the U.S. So I'm glad there's an investigation going on in this matter.
So do you think Congress should also look at, if they're going to do AID oversight, they should do oversight over this money as well in Lebanon?
Oh, 100%.
Before we jump onto the recent releases, let me ask both of you something, because I've always been, I think our listeners will be fascinated by this. Can you summarize in a nutshell why Lebanon is so complex politically? Because for an American audience, it's very confusing when they hear, well, one part of the government is controlled by one group, the other section by, it's three different groups. If you're a listener who's never figured the lesson of Lebanon, how would you explain it to them so they can understand how complex it is?
Well, I think the Beirut blast and going through investigation with the Beirut blast will be a perfect example to summarize Lebanon for you. So, unfortunately, Iran and Hezbollah control every sector of the Lebanese government. I'll start with what happened in the blast. And I think the audience will have an idea of how Lebanese politics work. So the Beirut blast happened in 2020. They found large amount of ammonium nitrate in the port. No one said anything about this amount of ammonium nitrate present in the port. And this was one of the largest non-nuclear explosion in the world. It killed over 215 people and injured thousands. Because Hezbollah controlled the majority of the sectors in Lebanon, including the judicial system. When people started rioting for an investigation of the court, three judges were changed because they, through their investigation, the suspects that were called in questioning were political officials close to Hezbollah. So two judges were removed, and then the last judge, Judge Bitar, was finally basically did not care about the threats he received from Hezbollah and wanted to go through the investigation till the end. So Lebanon is divided. You have Hezbollah threatening and controlling every sector, but then you still have few judges like Judge Bitar who actually want to do the right thing, and he wanted to go through the investigation till the end. However, he does not have the support of anyone in the government because they're all allies with Hezbollah and they're all controlled by Hezbollah. Mm-hmm. So this one judge decided to go through with the investigation despite all the threats he received. He detained 17 individuals that were essential in questioning about the port explosion. These individuals included head of security of the port, included head of customs, included people who knew exactly what happens in the port and knew about the ammonium nitrate. However, because Hezbollah control everything in Lebanon, a lot of the judges in the judiciary system work with Hezbollah, and a lot of lawsuits start happening against Judge Bitar, and this is what halted his investigation for the past 13 months. And I think people are confused about that. Why did he stop the investigation for 13 months? Well, it's because of all the lawsuits that happened against him, and the judges that were supposed to rule against these lawsuits, because they're against the law, retired before doing any ruling. So it took him 13 months to get the approval from the Supreme Court to continue his investigation. And this is what happened last week. He continued his investigation and released five of the 17 detainees that he believed are not needed for further questioning.
You know, something that came out from that, I read some stories about this, and you have the Sunnis and the Shia and the Christians, right? And it's all these three different groups warring with each other, I guess, some of them making deals with each other. This particular judge, it looks like he was trying to do the right thing, and the moment he decided to go after these influential people, Hezbollah came and crushed them again, or somebody pushed them out. We still don't know how. And you had the leading Christian leader down there saying that he must be allowed to continue doing his job, but that doesn't seem to have been enough, and now the whole thing is a mess again, it looks like.
Yeah, so Judge Sahab, which is the head of the Supreme Court, allowed him to continue his job. Unfortunately, his investigation is touching a lot of political officials that are involved with Hezbollah directly. An example of that is General Abbas Brahim, who is a main suspect in the port explosion. And just like you said, because Hezbollah control majority of Lebanon, Judge Waidit, who is a judge for Hezbollah, went against the law and released all the detainees and basically halted the investigation.
Let me ask you something, because this there's a Washington Post story that talks about a Lebanese American who was called a hostage.
Mm-hmm.
He happened to have been the head of security, port security, and the Washington, you know, he was in detention, he was on trial, he was being criticized apparently by the U.S. government, and somehow he got released, and people are saying this guy was a hostage, but how could he be a hostage if this guy was the head of security in probably the largest national security disaster in recent history in Lebanon? 200 plus people died. I'm not familiar with the due process he may or may have not received, but do you think what happened there merit him being treated as a hostage under the Robert Levinson Hostage Act? For those of you who don't know about this, there's a law here in the United States called the Levinson Hostage Recovery Act, and president's required to do certain things, and so is some of his senior advisors. I frankly didn't know idea this was a Levinson case. There's so many Levinson potential cases that don't even get attention from the State Department. This guy was in custody. 200 people died. what do you think has happened, and was this guy a hostage? And frankly, this kind of makes me wonder about accountability efforts in your dad's case, because your dad's case, all these Lebanese officials, not this port person, but there's some people who are connected with this investigation who, at least on the American side, because it looks like there was a lot of American pressure put on the Lebanese, I'm wondering, have they put that type of pressure on the Lebanese to bring somebody to account in your dad's case? I haven't seen it, but maybe you can shed some light on that for the listeners.
Yeah, I think there definitely should be transparency in the Levinson Act, because if you look at the comparison between our father's case and this case of Muhammad al-Awf, yes, he was the head of security at the port. And at the port, an explosion happened that killed over 200 people, displaced over thousands of individuals. He needs to be questioned to see what actually happened at the port. And I don't consider him as a hostage, because in our father's case, our father was held in Lebanon illegally. Under Lebanese law, our father should not have been held in Lebanon. Under Lebanese law, this individual was being questioned for his role at the Lebanese port with the explosion that happened that killed hundreds of people. Those are two completely different cases, and I think we need to start questioning the Levinson Act and asking the State Department for more transparency into the Levinson Act. And I do would like Chairman McCall to do a hearing on the Levinson Act on these hostage cases, because the American people deserve to know why do we have actual hostages in Venezuela and Russia, who America unfortunately is not giving any attention to and have been held there for years. Yet this individual in Lebanon, who is the head of the security at the port, that an explosion happened, and I want to repeat this just so people can understand the magnitude of this. An explosion happened at the port that killed hundreds of individuals, and he knows information of what happened. He needs to be questioned. This, we're not talking about an individual who's being used as a ransom for America. He's not being used as political pawn to get something from America. No, he's an individual that needs to be questioned to see what he knows of the information that happened at the port.
And by the way, for folks who don't know much about Lebanon, the port of Beirut, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it's a very important port, right? This is one of a critical port in Lebanon, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as if the explosion took place at a minor port. This happened at a major port in Lebanon.
Yeah. And we have to ask the question, if Muhammad Awf, as a Lebanese-American, you are the head of security of the port, you knew of the amount of ammonium nitrate that's in the port. Let's say he did do his job and send letters to the Lebanese government. We expect him to resign from his role, being a Lebanese-American under our values, because this was a threat to the whole country. This killed 215 people.
Well, you know, according to the Washington, I agree with you, by the way, and according to the Washington Post, it says that the State Department thought he was unlawfully detained, yet I know Americans who have been held hostage or unlawfully detained for years in Ecuador, Venezuela, Cuba, China, Russia, several other countries, and they haven't been given that designation. And lately, some of us in this advocacy community have started to question whether or not the process under the Levinson law has not, you know, has it been politicized? Are they cherry picking cases? Because if you happen to be, I don't know, a professional WNBA player with a lot of money, you seem to get a lot of attention, and he seems to be the case of the century. Yet there are families that have been waiting for years, and nothing happens. I know of a family in California whose father is a hostage in Iran,
mm-hmm.
and they're still waiting. They're still waiting. They do not answer. They won't do anything. Then I hear about your case. Your case, the Levinson Law, is two-pronged, folks, in case those listening haven't read it in the State Department and in the Congress. You do two things at the same time. You bring Americans home and U.S. nationals home, not just American citizens. Look at the definitions, U.S. nationals, and accountability. If you don't do both, you're not following the law. The Curry family has been trying for years to help their father help this family find out who did this to them. And we somehow, in Lebanon, are giving millions of dollars to a bunch of corrupt, crooked officials, including certain people who claim to be helping in the release of Americans. And I think they're double dealing with the Iranians, and they're helping fuel the Iranian Hezbollah hostage, multinational hostage operation, because they know how to game our system, and they know how to game our laws, and they know how to game U.S. officials. Now, the Khoury family may not want to say that. I'm the one who's saying that. What do you all think is going on here?
Yes, and we would like to ask the question, how come the State Department sided with Hezbollah on this matter in Lebanon? Basically, Hezbollah's judge released all 17 detainees, and we're talking about people who were responsible.
Whoa, stop. 17 people were released?
17, not just this American. 17 people were released against the law by a judge who took his decision based on threatening of sanctions from the U.S. Embassy. And these people that were released, some of them were responsible of what goes in the port, what goes out of the port. Some of them were essential in these questioning about this investigation about the port explosion. So we have now riots going on in Lebanon, Lebanese people sending us emails asking the question, where does America stand? Is America helping the Hezbollah in this matter? Because Hezbollah has been trying so hard to get Judge Bitar to be removed from the investigation. And right now, what we did is basically help this matter.
Do you all think that the U.S. government, based on what you've read and what you've heard from your colleagues on the ground, and by the way, folks, this family, they are working on this every day since their father passed away a few years ago. They have sources in Lebanon. They work the phones. They have a lot of inroads into that culture and that community, their ancestral homeland. So they're not going to stop until they have justice for their father. We don't know what that will look like, but they're not speaking from, you know, conspiracy theories or conjecture. They're doing their homework. They're reading. They need to get to the bottom of what's happening. Do you think the U.S. government or somebody in the U.S. government interfered with the Lebanese legal system?
I do believe there was interference, and this isn't just from me saying, just from articles that we've read in Lebanon with the U.S. Embassy threatening sanctions, like Gila said, if these individuals are not released. I do believe what happened was a big win for Hezbollah, and like Gila said, we've seen it with Hezbollah over the past 2 years since this investigation has started, has been threatening Judge Bitar. Judge Bitar and his family have received death threats. He's putting his life on the line. He's putting his family's life on the line to get justice for these 200 individuals that, 200 plus individuals that died. And he's been constantly receiving threats from Hezbollah. And now with what happened with the release of these 17 individuals, Hezbollah is, celebrating in the streets while the victims of the Beirut blast are protesting against what happened. So you see the difference of what the result of this release caused in Lebanon.
Well, Hezbollah is nothing more than a criminal cartel connected to the Iranian regime, state sponsors of terrorism, and every single Lebanese official who's in bed with these people should be held to account. I mean, I hear all these arguments from American Congress people, and I've been hearing them since the 1990s. It's the same story over and over again. And then guess what? Amir Fakhouri died. All right, folks? Amir Fakhouri died because our government wants to be complacent. They want to do this two-time Hezbollah cradle, you know, straddle the fence. And American died. And now we're politicizing our hostage policy the same way. Because anybody, any Lebanese official who claims they can get hostages out is in bed with Hezbollah. Bottom line. And they cannot be trusted. And in the case of Amir Fakhouri, some of these same officials are responsible for what happened to him. They're responsible for losing him, quote unquote, in the Lebanese prison death chamber system. They are responsible for not releasing him on time. They are responsible for his death. And we're now having business relationships with these people like if it's nothing. That has to change. There was no Levinson law before. There's a Levinson law now. You just can't blow off accountability. So the Fakuri family, what do you all think needs to happen besides congressional oversight? I know you all have something coming up maybe this week. You have a few things that you want to get out there. But if Congress were to do something, what would it be in the House, for example, as controlled by Republicans now? Maybe there'll be a check on some of this, which hasn't happened in a while. Gila, go first, and Zoya.
Well, I wanted to add one more thing, actually, to what you said. This investigation that's happening by Judge Bitar, foreign countries and international bodies have called to resume the investigation because they know how important it is. We have yet to hear from our administration support for Judge Bitar. We read the statement that was released by administration last week saying that after basically the all these people were released, the administration put out a statement that the truth needs to be released about who was involved in the Beirut explosion. However, how can we get to the truth if now we release all the people that are required for questioning? So this just out there for people to understand what's going on and what the State Department has released recently. And then we want to follow up after this with, if we haven't heard anything, by the way, about the letter of accountability that we sent previously before the holidays to the State Department. We heard they received it, but really nothing concrete about how we're going to hold accountable officials involved in our father's death. And we're going to follow up after this. And honestly, based on a lot of Lebanese people emailing us and talking to us, we want to follow up on this whole investigation thing at the port and how the U.S. administration is helping Judge Bitar continue his investigation and their involvement in the release of these detainees. So we would like more transparency from their side.
And I think regardless of whether whether the U.S. administration supports Judge Bitar or not, the real question is, what are they doing in helping Lebanon to get to the bottom of what happened with the port explosion? Because as of now, anyone who works at the port, who was responsible, who knew of the ammonium nitrate that was left there, they've all now been released with the help of America. So my question is, what is America doing to actually get to the bottom of this port? If you are already interfering now with this investigation that's happening in Lebanon, how are you interfering with actually getting to the bottom of this, with actually getting to who should be held accountable for this death? Or are they just going to let the story just die down like they allowed our father's story to die down and hopefully move on from it and not shed any light to it? Because that's how we feel is happening with our father's case. Our father died in 2020, and we have not heard anything. We have not heard any of any investigation that America is doing into the Lebanese officials that played a role in our father's death. And we feel the same thing is happening to the victims of the Beirut blast. And honestly, I'm upset. I'm furious with the administration because it feels to me that we are helping Hezbollah in Lebanon. That's how it feels to me, especially with the recent news.
Well, the Maronite patriarch, Bashar al-Rahi, on Sunday publicly supported Judge Tarek Bitar and urged that he be allowed to continue his work, which is unusual. He doesn't get involved in politics all the time. And to hear him say something, and from what I've read about this judge, he seems to be pretty impartial. He had the confidence of a lot of different groups. We were talking at the beginning of the show about the different groups in Lebanon, the different factions, and he seems to have had a lot of support. Why, if the U.S. government interfered in this, and that's something the U.S. Foreign Affairs Committee and the House should maybe take a look at, maybe Judge Bitar should be invited to testify before Congress and tell his side of the story, because obviously somebody's trying to smother him and silence him. And maybe we have to hear his side of the story, because ultimately America is helping pay to rebuild Lebanon. We are paying. We're the largest donor nation in Lebanon. We are also one of the largest loan providers. We back a lot of loans to that country. We've invested a lot of money in rule of law, something that Global Liberty Alliance cares passionately about, rule of law. Interfering with judges and court cases, not something we're supposed to be doing. How would we like it? Would we take orders from Hezbollah if they started threatening our judges? I mean, we wouldn't do that. We'd go out there and maybe we'd do something about it. And I think the State Department may have overplayed their hand if they were interfering in court cases, and they need to be held to account as well. Maybe we can't do anything about Hezbollah, but we can sure as hell do something about bureaucrats or diplomats who overreach and start interfering in judicial matters and not holding ourselves to a higher standard, which I think we must do everywhere we go around the world. That's a bad precedent, especially for accountability and hostage taking. How does this impact your case? I mean, how do you feel? I know you have a case here in U.S. District Court. I'm not saying that case. I'm saying in your accountability project, in what you're trying to do and your family's trying to do to bring to justice someone or some group of people who did what they did to your father. Does something like this make it harder for you all to do what you're doing?
Well, absolutely, I think. And, you know, I just want to say this one thing. You know, recently there has been news that we heard in Lebanese media that the U.S. Embassy is supporting Abbas Ibrahim's, extending Abbas Ibrahim's role as the general security, as the head of the general security. And that does affect our case because at the end of the day, our father was illegally held at the general security. The head of the Lebanese general security knew of his illegal detention, knows of the torture that's going on in his facility. And we now, the U.S. Embassy is now pushing for an extension of his role.
Zoya, tell people who Abbas Ibrahim is and what his role is in your dad's situation.
So Abbas Ibrahim is the director of the general security. And at the general security, our father was initially held. That's where he was tortured. That's where he was forced to sign false documents. That's where the initial report that my father supposedly has an Israeli citizenship, which he doesn't have, came out. And that's how our father's reputation got ruined since then from false reports from the general security. This is what the general security is. And we are scared to go back to Lebanon because we will most likely get taken at the general security. The head of the general security, if he doesn't know what's going on in his own facility, he should not be running this facility. And this individual is now being supported to extend his role by the U.S. Embassy. That should be concerning for everybody.
So let me ask you something. If the head of general security, all right, the intelligence services, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, when Zoya mentions that they were trying to ruin his reputation, if you go to Israel with a Jewish citizenship, I mean, if you go to Lebanon, if they even let you in with Jewish citizenship, bad things will happen to you folks, okay? Hezbollah hates Israel. So that's what she's trying to communicate, is that it was a smear job in Lebanese politics. And you can read more about it in the old podcast. Listen to the old podcast. You'll learn more about that part of it. But if this head of general security, this General Abbas Ibrahim, didn't know about your dad's situation when he was in custody, how can he be such a reliable partner in helping get Americans out of jail? It makes no sense to me. So somebody's not telling the truth.
Exactly. And, you know, we have requested to speak with General Abbas Ibrahim just because, as many of you guys know, he has been coming here to the States many times. And we have asked the State Department that we want to speak with him because we believe he has. If he is actually not responsible for what happened to our father, we believe he does have information on who was responsible. And he denied that request. He did not want to speak with us. And I think it's because we have a lot of questions we want to ask him that he will be unable to answer.
He should not be allowed to enter the United States. We'll say it right here. We've said this privately, but I'll say it publicly. Nobody from the Lebanese government who has information, who knows or has reason to know about what happened to Amir Fakhouri, should ever be given a U.S. visa, not even a diplomatic visa, until they share what they know about the death of Amir Fakhouri. And so until they cooperate, those people shouldn't be coming into our country. I sure don't want them here. We don't need them here. They don't bring anything of value here but headaches and pain and suffering to this family. And I know this family has offered to meet with Abbas Ibrahim many times, and he has said no. Well, you know what? Stay in Lebanon. You don't get to come here and have nice fancy dinners at clubs in Washington, D.C., or go to Disney World, or go do whatever it is you do here, until you answer this family's many questions. You stay in Lebanon and go to Paris or do whatever you want to do, but we don't want those people here. I mean, do you think that's reasonable under the Levinson law?
Yeah, and I would like to stress the importance of differentiating between our father's case and this Lebanese-American that was released recently, because our father was kidnapped, as Zoya said. He was kidnapped under the Lebanese law. There was no charges against him. He was illegally detained, whereas now we released an American who was essential in questioning in the biggest explosion, one of the largest explosions in the world that killed 215 people. And on top of that, he was given access to fly to the U.S., one-way ticket. So they removed him from Lebanon completely. So just to clarify things, and if Spiha thinks that this individual is illegally detainee who is classified as a hostage, we would like to see facts. We would like to see why he was classified as a hostage. Because these are things for people who are listening.
Yeah, two things there. One, and when she said Spiha, she meant the Special Presidential Envoy for Hostage Affairs. It's an office that's in charge now of dealing with hostage diplomacy. We can do a whole show about that office. It has its pros, it has its cons, but that's subject for another day. A lot of good people working there, though. And they are responsible for not just helping bring Americans home, but for accountability. The other part of this is also what you said about Amir and his death. I believe your father, based on the facts, based on the case that you filed in the district court, in the District of Columbia, I believe your father was lured to Lebanon. So it was a conspiracy to have your father go back to Lebanon under false pretenses so they could lock him up and do what they did to him. Because your father had not been in Lebanon, I think, for what, 20, 30 years after he had left?
Yeah, 20 years. And it's basically what happened to my father is what we see with a lot of true hostages around the world, like the one you mentioned in California. He was also lured and he was kidnapped. We're talking about Rwanda, Rasisi Bagina. He was kidnapped. But here, we're not talking about a hostage situation. Here, we're talking about a person who was working in the Lebanese port, head of security, who was responsible of what's in the port. He knew about the ammonium nitrate, and we cannot classify this as a hostage. We have to be clear on who is a hostage and who is not. And Spiha has to be transparent about this. We can't have on social media people thanking Spiha for her involvement in the release of Muhammad Al-Awf, yet no statements from Spiha.
You know, the thing about Spiha, and again, I don't know all the facts here, internally in the building, I imagine, there is, when you're the new kid on the block, there must be a tension there between two other bureaus, one of them being Consular Affairs, the other one being the Regional Bureau, in this case, NEA, the Regional Bureau that deals with Middle East Affairs. And there must be some competing equities there. Maybe they've made a decision not to give certain cases to Spiha. Maybe they've made that decision another way. But like I said earlier on in the program, we don't want cherry picking of cases. And like Gil and Zoya are talking about, there are families waiting, not just for accountability, but for just shifting the cases. You have Shahab Dalili, who's from Virginia. They're Americans. Their father's been in Iran forever. You have the Stevenson brothers in Ecuador, unjustly imprisoned for crimes they didn't commit. You have, there's a lot of other cases I could mention. I can't mention all of them because some of these families do not want notoriety. But there's so many other people who want Spiha or the attention these cases need to have for resolution, and it doesn't happen. I don't quite understand it. I'm not sure why this is happening. I don't even know if it's a Spiha problem. It could be a political problem. But as usual, you have this tension that's delaying the release of Americans and accountability. I mean, the case up in California you just mentioned there, that's the case of Sharmad. That man, they tried to assassinate him in 2009, the Iranians did, in California, and they kidnapped him during a business trip, but it was in the Middle East, and still, nothing from Spiha yet. It's bizarre. Yet, a basketball player, a WNBA basketball player who broke Russian law, gets star treatment, red carpet treatment, but all these other families, and there's many I haven't mentioned, get the better treatment? No, that's wrong. By the way, there's a teacher in Russia. There's two Americans in Russia, the Marine, Paul Whelan, and a teacher who is in jail for the exact same thing as that basketball player. Can you believe that? And he's been in jail longer. And that fella, nobody talks about him. So
no.
It's very concerning when I hear what you all are saying. We're speaking to Zoya and Gila Fakhouri about their father's case, Amir Fakhouri, an American who was died at the hands of Hezbollah and Lebanese officials, and I believe the Iranian regime, who was grudge. They're out in a grudge match. These people will come after you. It doesn't matter how long it takes. And where's the accountability? Where's the justice? Why are we having these programs to complain about our own government? What should we be doing, do you think? If you're listening to this, listen to what this family's saying. Go to their website. Log in for their updates. What else can we do, Gila and Zoya, to help you and what you're doing?
I want more transparency from our government. And if they don't want to give everyone transparency, I think the families of hostage cases deserve transparency. Like Gila said, we have not heard. We sent a letter back in November. We have not heard back from the U.S. Embassy in Lebanon. We have not heard back from the State Department regarding this letter. We're left in the dark on where America stands with our father's case, with Hezbollah in Lebanon. And I think that's disturbing that we don't know where America stands with this terrorist regime that occupies Lebanon right now. And that's all I ask. I want transparency. I want to know where America stands.
I would like to add that in this matter, right now, what happened this week and with the interference of the U.S. Embassy in this investigation, that was definitely a win for Hezbollah, not a win for democracy. And this is disturbing. We should not be silent about this. Someone needs to be held accountable for what happened. We need to know who interfered in the investigation, why they interfered, why these people were released, and why the State Department is not taking a strong stand with Judge Bitar, like basically all the Lebanese people are. All the Lebanese people are with this judge to continue his investigation. The victims of the Lebanese poor are rioting every day trying to continue this investigation. We as a country, we should stand by our values. We should stand behind the people, and we should really continue to help Judge Bitar continue his investigation. And we want questions of why we're not doing that. We want answers of why we're not doing that.
You know, last year, Gila and Zoya, you know about the trial in Virginia, in fact, very close to our office where the GLA has its Alexandria office, the trial for one of the individuals involved in the slaying of Jim Foley. And it was a powerful trial. I went for a few of the sessions. I couldn't stay for all of them. I wasn't there when his mom, Diane Foley, testified during the trial. And it was powerful to see that process unfold after so many years after the death, abduction, torture, and death of her son and other Americans, including Kayla Mueller and Peter Kasich and Stephen Sotloff and, of course, James Foley. To see it all come together at a trial, it was something that I hope you all have at some point. It helps, I believe, in the accountability process, in justice. That's how America should be carrying itself out when we have the opportunity to do it. Sometimes these men and women who take people hostage meet another form of justice, and that's okay too. It all depends on the circumstances. But to be there, to hear this testimony, to see the families have that, it was like a cathartic moment. It was just such a good process. It was imperfect. I think the Foley family would tell you they don't have all the answers, but they have some of the answers, and it was good not just for their family, but for the entire community of individuals who are affected by this, which unfortunately keeps growing because more and more Americans keep being abducted. In the case of the death of your father, I know you want to see something like this happened. Well, again, and when I meet with families and talk about this, we always discuss, look, we're not sure what justice will look like, but you'll know when you believe you've been made whole, your dad's memory has been made whole. What would you like to see at this point? Because you all are doing so much. You're in court. You're in the D.C. D.C. in the Washington D.C. federal courts. you have been asking Congress. We've helped in some of the accountability efforts that you're doing. You've briefed members of Congress. You've briefed staff. I know that you continue to ask for answers. When do you know, like, what do you tell people who are going through this? When do you know that you've reached that point where you're having, is it a trial? Is it a combination of things? What do you, when you talk to other families, what do you tell them as people who've lived this?
Yeah, I believe we would like to see people involved in the death of our father held accountable for what they did. We want the truth. We want to hear what happened, who ordered the kidnapping of our father, the people who tortured him. We want to know names. We want to see officials that were involved in this matter to actually be held accountable and not have open invitation to the states anytime they want to come. So we would like to see accountability that way, and we also push for families not to give up, because it's been a long fight for us. It's been 2 years of us fighting for accountability. So we encourage families not to give up, to be vocal about their cases. The fight is not easy. It's draining emotionally and physically, but we hope eventually to be able to see those officials held accountable in a trial or through sanctions.
And I do want to say, you know, our motto for the foundation is silence is not an option, and that's what we continue to tell families. Do not stay silent. And I know it's scary, and I know it's it puts our lives at risk, but if we continue to stay silent, this situation will continue to happen. If my family stayed silent, people will not know that my father was illegally held. They will not know that my father died because of the abuse he faced in Lebanon, because of individuals like Abbas Ibrahim, who played a role in our father's legal detention, and now he's able to come to the States as he wishes. You need to stand up and talk about what is going on and not stay silent. So that's really what we push for.
You know, for families that are going through this, it's that staying silent part is a common theme, that the U.S. government tries to have families say nothing. There's this wonderful woman called, I know you know her, Catherine Sweden. Her son has been, in my opinion, he's a hostage of the Communist Party of China for 10 years. Can you believe that? 10 years. And that woman, for so many years, she's a patriot. She's a beautiful, beautiful person. Catherine Sweden, I know you're listening. You will be listening to this. Keep fighting, because she was told for years to be quiet. And we've talked to her. We've recorded shows with her. I know you have as well. When someone tells you, and by the way, there will be some news soon on the Sweden case, so stay tuned. You'll be hearing some news, hopefully front page news, coming this week and maybe next week. I'm not sure if he's coming home. That's not the news I'm talking about, but important news on the accountability side and some other announcements that are coming. When they tell you all to be quiet, and then, you know, we have to be wrapping up, but I think this is important for families who are going through this, that they hear this from people who've lived it. When the State Department tells you to be quiet when someone's been abducted, I know sometimes you have to be, and you have to weigh all the options, but when did you make a decision to say enough is enough, we're not going to stay quiet anymore, and when do you think is the best time to go public on something like this?
So I think it's definitely a case-by-case basis, but, you know, for our case, we immediately went public. I know we waited like a few weeks, 3 weeks, but then once we saw, and we know Lebanese politics, we know how they are, we know the lies that they say. So we really did not believe them, and that's why we immediately went public, because we knew if we waited, our father would not have gotten back home in the 7 months that he did. He definitely would have died in the prison cell in Lebanon. So we understand Lebanese politics, and that's why we made the decision to go public. And, you know, it's that case-by-case basis, so it definitely depends on the case. But
I do believe that going public early on is essential. Although, yes, you're right, you need to weigh your options, you need to talk about pros and cons about going public with your case, but then the other option is to stay silent, and I know many families stay silent for the first a year or two, and their loved ones stayed illegally detained, and no one even knew about their cases, and once they started to go public, they got more attention, from the public and from the State Department about their case. So it is very crucial to talk about your case and go public, in my opinion.
Yeah, because it also puts a risk, like, yes, there's risks in going public, but in the many cases I've seen, many times when you do wait, especially after a year, after then, sometimes you don't even know where your loved one is held. You don't even know if they're still alive in the prison. Especially we see these cases and the hostages held in Syria, you know, after years of not staying quiet about the case, we don't know what remains of these hostages in Syria, because we have no information, because no one knew of these cases. And there wasn't a push on our administration to act quickly. And, you know, like I said, our motto is silence is not an option. We don't believe in staying silent. To each their own, everyone has to judge their case. Like I said, it's a case-by-case basis. But for us, silence will never be an option. And we do push for families to speak up and to push our administration to do more, or else the story will be shoved under our rug. That's how we see it.
And for those of you who travel internationally, I can't stress enough how important it is to do your research where you're going. If you're going to travel to a place like Lebanon, for example, which I don't recommend for most Americans, but read the State Department travel warnings. Take them seriously. Postpone travel. I mean, find somewhere else to go. Learn where people are being taken hostage and abducted. Learn a little bit about the legal system. Have a plan if you are detained. There's a lot of resources out there now. Get in contact with us and some other groups. The Fikori Foundation also has a lot of tips. You have to prepare when you travel, not just for the sightseeing, but you have to prepare if something goes wrong and you have run-ins with the law. And there are some countries where, frankly, and Lebanon's one of them, you do not want to end up in custody of the Lebanese security services, especially if you're an American citizen, because when you have that blue passport, you become a target, and especially in the Middle East. Most places around the world are pretty safe to travel to, but you have to prepare when you travel. So do your due diligence. Check the State Department travel warnings. Read up on the security in those countries. Get insurance. There is insurance, extraction insurance, that you can purchase, not just for medical, but for legal reasons. It's an additional cost, but ultimately one, I think it's important. You may never need it. I hope you never need it. But take precautions. Do you think those are reasonable tips, Zoya and Gila?
Yes, that's perfectly true. We also advise to look into the country you're traveling to, see how strong Iran and Hezbollah's influence is there. That's essential, especially in the Middle East. And we agree.
And I do want to add that if your passport ever does get taken at the airport when arriving into a country, to immediately go to the U.S. Embassy.
That happened to your father, right?
Yes, and I wish we immediately went to the U.S. Embassy after they had taken his passport at the airport.
Yeah, we tell, and this is travel, because I've had to travel a lot over the years for work and when I spent time in the government. And that's one thing you never, ever, folks, let out of your possession. I don't care what they tell you. Even when they're going to photocopy it at a hotel, never leave your passport unattended. Make copies. And do exactly what Zoya just recommended. If anybody does take your passport, immediately go to the U.S. Embassy and report it. It can avert many a headache. And I'm sure your father didn't think anything of it. Frankly, most Americans don't think anything of it because they just don't know. This is not something that is common knowledge. But if you're going to travel, I don't care if it's England or even if it's an allied country, as soon as they take your passport from you and they refuse to give it back to you, you report it to the embassy. So as we're getting to the end of our podcast, I want to thank Zoya and Gila Fikori for joining so quickly today. We hadn't planned on doing this weekend, but I thought it was important because it has some news coming this week, and I wanted to give them an opportunity to talk some more about what's happened, and hopefully there'll be some great developments for your efforts to bring some accountability and some justice to your case. Do you have any parting words for the listeners?
I just want to thank you so much, Jason, for having us on today. And thank you for giving us this platform to speak about these issues, because unfortunately, there aren't as many brave people like you who are willing to speak about these issues and push our administration to do more. So thank you so much, and I hope anyone who is listening to this to help support our case, help support and push for accountability from our administration, because like I said, if we stay silent on issues like this, then we will continue to see hostage taking happening around the world.
Hila, any parting words?
Yeah, I would like, you know, to thank you again, Jason, for doing this and for caring about issues like this that is affecting innocent Lebanese people and the Middle East. So thank you for having us, and we hope your listeners now will understand what is happening in Lebanon, especially with these developments in the last 2 weeks about the investigation of the Beirut blast.
Well, Zoya, Gila, thank you for being with us, for sharing, again, a very painful story, but also a very promising initiative that you've all have launched to bear witness to honor your dad's memory. I know your dad was a proud American. He was a fighter. He was a patriot. He was somebody who deeply loved this country. And I know that he'd be so proud. In fact, he is proud. He's looking down on you and he's backing you. And I hope that you can continue in the good fight. These people in Washington, they know you're not going to go away, so they may try and wear you down. But this family will continue. Please say hi to your mom and your other sisters and tell them I know that we have a lunch date that's still pending.
Yes, we're waiting for you to come here to New Hampshire.
I look forward to doing it. Thanks again. Have a great week.
Thank you, Jason. You too.
Thank you. Bye.